This boat briefing podcast is sponsored by KVH Industries, which creates and delivers the innovations that enable our mobile world. A global leader in mobile connectivity, KVH's groundbreaking award-winning solutions enable people on leisure boats, yachts, and commercial vessels to stay connected to business, family, and friends using innovative hybrid communications and content. Founded in 1982, the company is based in Middleton, Rhode Island, with research, development, and manufacturing operations in Middleton and sales, service, and engineering offices around the globe. Their website, kvh.com. You can follow them on Facebook at KVH Yachting and Boating, on Instagram at KVH Yachting, and you can also visit KVH Yachting and Boating on LinkedIn. Now, on with the podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell, and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Sophia Wilson.
Good morning, Stuart.
Good morning. Shall we get our plugs out of the way?
Yeah, let's do an early. I like an
early
doors plug. I'm a fan.
We've already plugged KVH, so let's plug ourselves.
Yeah, we're going to plug ourselves. So I'm going to start with my plug, which is that I want to take the opportunity to say that there is an opening on my team. We are looking for a new digital writer to come and join the gang. I'm clearly biased, but I think it's a great opportunity for anyone with an interest in yachts or starting out in their career in media. You can come and be at the heart of things about international and, of course, working for the best publication in the industry. It's pretty fast-paced, so I'm looking for someone that's really prepared to get stuck in with everything across the site, has a passion for writing, and of course, great attention to detail. There'll be plenty of opportunities for travel, believe me, and being out and about in the industry. So if interested, please email the podcast email address or email me directly. I'm not going to give out my email address because if you're a journalist, you should be able to find that online somewhere.
Oh, good test.
Yeah. Test number one. Can you find my personal email? Not personal, but email address. Personal email address might get a bit border on creepy.
The podcast email address, as a reminder, is podcast@boatinternationalmedia.com. We always put it in the description as well, so you can just cut and paste it. And we also have the sales job still open as well. We've had a few applicants, but it's not too late to chuck your CV into the ring. That's joining the commercial team. And again, you know, the opportunities for seeing all parts of the industry and doing some amazing travel and meeting some very, very interesting people are boundless, really. I mean, they're great roles, both of them. So let us know if you're out there, get in touch. So usually on the Boat Briefing podcast, when we have a fluffy story, we try and end with a fluffy story, as all good news organizations do. But we thought we'd flip format on its head this week because it actually gives us an opportunity to talk about another story involving a super yacht. But this is the news that a gentleman fisherman from St. Martin, who got washed out to sea on his fishing boat, survived for 24 days on ketchup, Maggi soup cubes, and I think, what was the other thing? What was the third magic ingredient?
Garlic powder.
Garlic powder, that's right. So the poor bloke, obviously, it was adrift for 24 days at sea. But because he survived on ketchup, when this news story hit the wires, some very clever wag at Heinz, the famous ketchup maker, launched a social media campaign saying, find the ketchup boat guy. And he was eventually tracked down. And as a result of surviving largely on ketchup for 24 days, Heinz have bought him a new boat.
What a result.
Yeah. So he did obviously almost die.
Yeah.
he did get a new boat. So it did lead to some discussion in the office about if you had to survive for 24 days at sea, but you knew there was a new boat waiting for you at the end, but you had to choose a condiment to survive on.
Yeah, you're rude about my choice. Mine would be mayonnaise. I'd be sponsored by mayonnaise.
I just think mayonnaise in the Caribbean sun for 24 days.
I mean, I don't think any option is ideal. What's your take?
I think I must whole grain mustard. I'd go for whole grain. I could eat jars of whole grain mustard.
Yeah, I think that's more rogue than mayonnaise. Anyway,
you could be right, but I don't know. Look, I don't think any of us are going to get a free boat for eating a lot of whole grain mustard or mayonnaise, which is sad because I think Sophia and I eat quite a lot of both. But also. leads us quite neatly onto another story that was on the website, actually about another boat that's adrift, and this is the Nordhavn Vivi Ray. Actually, the owner was interviewed in Boat International a few years ago. He does some amazing cruising in this boat. He's been everywhere in Vivi Ray. But so she got a fishing rope. We understand she got a fishing rope wrapped around her props and she was disabled and left adrift. But I do think the latest update is that she's been towed to shore.
Yeah, I think they're still in the process of trying to recover her at the moment. I believe now they have evacuated the kind of guests and crew from on board, and it's now just a full recovery mission. But we'll obviously keep the story updated on the website as things continue to progress.
But everyone's okay, which is the best
Yeah.
news.
Yeah.
But it does sound like they were just kind of left drifting for a few days there, completely disabled in these quite well, unserviced waters by the emergency services. I think they're in quite a remote place.
Yeah, I need to look where they are. I'm wondering whether they're in the same place as Emma Bamford, who used to work for us, obviously wrote that big novel about basically being cast adrift in the waters of Indonesia. So they're reliving it in real life. But
Well, they're in the Arafuru Sea.
yeah. But
I'm not
yeah.
familiar with the Arafuru Sea.
But I have to say, I didn't realise that could happen in terms of that something like a rope getting caught around the props could completely disable a super yacht.
Well, usually if it happens, you're in a place where you can get a diver in the water, or if you are a diver, you can get down there and hack it off. But it must be some serious rope. It must be a massive, well, maybe a net, because there's lots of rogue nets, aren't there? There's lots of that's a massive problem, in fact. Actually, that talk about rogue nets and fishing practices and things like that, again, quite neatly, a complete accidentally, neatly, leads us on to the next story, which is actually the brilliant news, Sophia. Why don't you take this one?
Yeah, so this is the brilliant news that after 10 years of negotiation, the world's nations have agreed the High Seas Treaty, which is aiming to put 30% of the world's oceans under protection by 2030. To put this into context, the figure now is just 1.2%.
I was amazed when I saw that 1.2% figure. I just figured it would be more than that.
So did I. So the last international agreement on ocean protection was signed 40 years ago in 1982.
I cannot believe 1982 was 40 years ago. That is, God Almighty. Let me have an existential crisis
Yeah,
briefly while you
you
carry
carry
on.
on with that. These new protected areas will put limits on how much fishing can take place, the routes of shipping lanes, and the exploration activities like deep sea mining. Laura Meller, an ocean campaigner for Greenpeace Nordic, commended countries for putting aside differences and delivering a treaty that will let us protect the oceans, build our resilience to climate change, and safeguard the lives and livelihoods of billions of people. This is a historic day for conservation and a sign that in a divided world, protecting nature and people can triumph over geopolitics, she added. So again, another plug from us. But this does also give us a great opportunity to talk about Ocean Talks, which is coming back to be an in-person event this year, which is really exciting because we've had a few years of virtual events, which have been great, but it would be great to be back in person. So it's happening on the 8th of June in London. We're slightly switching up the format this year. So we are going to have speakers still, but we're also going to have a brilliant bunch of exhibitions. And the idea is kind of a much more relaxed, you know, hear some of the talks, but also go and have these great one-to-one conversations with some of the exhibitors that are there.
And I hope this news actually forms part of the conversation on the 8th of June during the Ocean Talks event, because this is kind of mega news on the conservation front, from 1.2% to 30% of the high seas under protection by 2030. It's huge. So, which I will hopefully mean fewer rogue fishing nets floating around the ocean getting snagged in propellers, which is a win-win. So Sophia and I are on a plane early tomorrow morning. We're off to the Caribbean for various events. And it's also in the Caribbean that you can find the superyacht Alfa Nero, the 81.3 meter Alfa Nero, one of the world's best known superyachts. She's in Falmouth Harbour at the moment in Antigua and has been there since February 2022. But the local government say she has been abandoned. She was blocked from leaving the port after it was suspected the owner was on the international sanctions list following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Minister of Justice and Attorney General of Antigua and Barbuda, Sidroy Benjamin, has now declared that the vessel is a hazard to shipping and to the harbour where it is moored. So the government have given notice that unless the owner claims the vessel within 10 days, and we published this story, I think, on the 3rd, So unless they get back to him by the 13th, they're going to sell the boat to the highest bidder. So a statement issued by the government said crew had not been paid, nor had a local fuel provider. So next week, we could find out the fate of Alfa Nero.
I mean, she's some yacht as well. It's going to be fascinating to see who ends up buying her.
Yeah, or if the owner tries to claim her in this period. I guess we'll wait and see. We haven't had any word yet. But there, obviously we're in touch with the government, getting press releases and the like. So as soon as we have information, you'll have information.
Have you ever been on board her, Stu?
I've not. I only ever admired her from a distance.
So she was at the Antigua Yacht Show, and I can't remember which edition now, a few years ago, but she was in the chef's competition. So I remember having lunch on that incredible aft deck with the swimming pool, and because it was the chef's competition, they'd done this incredible kind of decoration and fancy setup. And I seem to remember eating with my feet in water. So I'm trying to think whether they did the table over the swimming pool or whether that's just a weird kind of dream that I had. I'm not sure, but... But she, yeah, that space is amazing. And she completely, Cecile, our US editor, posted this story saying how much she feels that she really kind of shifted that next generation of design in terms of space on board and how space was used.
Yeah, she really did. She was quite a revolutionary yacht in lots and lots of ways, not least because of that aft deck pool, which, you know, she's probably most known for. That aft view is really special. So we'll see what happens, really. But there is precedent. Because in August last year, 72.5-metre Axioma was sold at auction in Gibraltar following a loan violation, which may have resulted from her owner being placed on the sanctions list. So she eventually went for $37 million after the Admiralty Court of Gibraltar received 63 bids and did their DD on each. And the person who eventually got her picked her up for $37 million. So Axioma... is a 1,620 gross ton boat. And going for $37 million meant that she went for $22,839 per gross ton. So according to that $37 million settlement, she is worth $22,839 per gross ton. So Alfa Nero is 2,159 gross tons. And if you use the same cost per gross ton calculation, she is worth $49.31 million if you apply the same cost per GT calculation. So we will see. I guess they'll publish the exact figure eventually, won't they? And there must be some law about transparency that means they have to reveal it.
I think there is for auctions. But I mean, that seems... low for that yacht. Presumably, if she was put on the open market, you would expect her asking price to be higher, considerably higher than that.
Considerably higher than that. But I think a lot of people thought that about Axioma as well. Because actually, if you look at that $23,000 per gross ton for Axioma is not expensive. If you look at the caliber of the boat she is, and that's certainly not expensive cost per gross ton calculation if you look at Alfa Nero as well, given her pedigree. But I guess we'll wait and see. So, there's been some other big boats sold at auction over the years. So 91.5-meter Equanimity, she went for $126 million back in 2018 and was renamed Tranquility. She's actually been listed for sale again, asking 149.9 million euros with Burgess. So mentioning this gives me a great excuse to recommend the book Billion Dollar Whale by Tom Wright and Bradley Hope. It's an amazing story about Joe Lowe, who fooled the world into thinking he was a massively successful businessman, but really he was allegedly siphoning funds from Malaysia's sovereign wealth fund. He remains a free man, according to various news reports, and resides in China, despite being wanted by just about everyone. But read the book, though. It's got some amazing details in that book. He seduced everyone, this bloke, real charmer, you know, hanging out with Leo DiCaprio, Paris Hilton, Jamie Foxx, Miranda Kerr, throwing huge parties. For a while, he was, you know, feted as, you know, big man on the scene.
Is it available as an audiobook? I might download it for this week's travels.
Yeah, you should. You really should. It's just unbelievable. You kind of think, how could anyone get away with that? But he did. Amazing book.
There's other similar stories that, you know, podcast series and stuff be made out of. I just find it absolutely fascinating. I'd never be brazen enough.
That'd be a brilliant podcast series, wouldn't it? The story of JLo. Yeah. Maybe that's one. Maybe a Boat Briefing spin-off. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll sort out an interview to do it. No problem.
We got definitely got the time for that, haven't we?
Perfect.
73-meter Titania, sold at auction back in 2010. So I know a bit about this one because I spent some time with her owner, John Cordwell, for an interview in Boat. So I remember John telling me he felt guilty because he won the auction with a bid of 33.75 million euros, around half the boat's estimated value, mainly because he got on so well with Titania's previous owner, Dave Ritchie. He told me at the time, he said, "I instantly felt very sad. I had come to really like the Ritchies, and I had bought the boat way too cheaply." It's not a sentiment you hear very often, is it? I wish I'd paid more. But we'll wait and see what happens with Alfa Nero. By my calculations, she will be the third biggest superyacht ever sold at auction, after Indian Empress at 95 meters and Equanimity at 91.5. So from auctions to the brokerage market, I've picked an absolute stunner for my brokerage pick this week.
You always
I'm
say
guessing.
that.
I know, I chew. That's true. So my brokerage pick is the gorgeous little 33.5 meter sailing yacht Iduna, which has just had a 1.3 million euro price drop. She is listed with Edmiston and Holland Yacht Collection, and she was delivered by FedShip, one of only four sailing super yachts the Dutch yard has ever built. She was delivered in 1939 and was the flagship of the FedShip fleet all the way to 1960. So she held the title for almost for over 20 years. That's pretty amazing, really. But for 10 points, Sophia, this is the hardest question that's ever been asked on the Boat Briefing podcast. Can you name the three other FedShip sailing yachts over 24 meters?
No, I mean, absolutely not. I'm not Raphael. I don't know who you think I am. The only one that I can think of is, we spoke about it on the podcast a while ago. There's definitely one that's kind of built in the shape of a kind of Dutch barge. And I remember we discussing her because she's really quirky and she's got a really quirky story behind her, but I cannot remember, can't even remember the name. So no points, I think.
So the boat you're talking about is the 28.04 meter Devrouw Christina, who was delivered. She was delivered in 1957. She's actually also for sale, asking 1.25 million euros with Camper Nicholson's. Gorgeous boat, really, really lovely. So I saw her at the Palm Beach Boat Show a few years ago. Like you said, a Dutch barge. But apparently, I've learned in researching Dutch barges that saying barge just isn't good enough. There's 1,000 different varieties of Dutch barge. Like the Inuit with snow, there's quite a few different terms. So I'm going to try and we're going to, because our pronunciations are so bad, particularly of Dutch words, here's a few of my favorites. I'm going to go first and you're going to go second because the
Crikey.
second one's quite funny.
Can I just say at the top here, I'm quite dyslexic, so I really apologize to any Dutch listeners in advance for what is about to happen.
So this is a Bert ship, which is a line ship for inland carriage of passengers and freight according to a regular schedule, a Bert ship.
Okay, so the next one I think is Dekschuit, which is any barge with an aft cabin below the aft deck.
I was hoping you were going to pronounce that differently. There's a Katwijker, which is a Dutch barge, which is a barge from Katwijk, a district located on the North Sea.
Okay, then there's a Paviljoen ship, which is a barge whose standing height aft cabin gives rise to a raised pavilion aft deck.
Pavilion ship. There's a Lux Motor. This is my favorite. A Pavilion type barge with a straight stem and a ducktail counter stern.
There's a pram, even I can do that one. A shallow draft punt-like barge propelled manually using a large barge pole.
A Schootsje, as pronounced Schootsje, a Frisian sailing boat similar to a Tjalk.
A Staalstephen, which is a barge with an upright stem.
And finally, Tjalk, a heavily built barge with an upright stem, originally tiller steered. Thank you, Wikipedia.
I'm sorry to all of our Dutch listeners.
Yeah, sorry, that was a mauling of your beautiful language. Back to our classic FedShip sailing boats. So, as well as Devrouw Christina, there's 29.57 Invicta, also delivered in 1957. And the last of the quartet is Spirit of Freedom, a motor sailor delivered in 1972. So four FedShip sailing boats over 24 meters. But back to Iduna. So she's had a really colorful life. She was owned by a Dutch shipping magnate, Philippus van Ommeren the Third, as well as a Portuguese nobleman and a consortium of owners in England. She got a big rebuild in 1999 after falling into disrepair and was last refitted in 2022. So from the pictures, she looks in fantastic condition. She can accommodate six guests in three cabins, and there's tons of open deck space for dinner or relaxing. She's asking 3.9 million euros after that price drop, so not a bad number for a piece of genuine sailing history. But bear with me, Sophia, because I'm going to break the brokerage pick rules a little bit here, because in looking into Iduna, I slipped down another rabbit hole, which I'm prone to do, a classic FedShip shaped rabbit hole, because I stumbled across by complete accident a boat with which I am now obsessed. She's another FedShip, obviously called City, but she was launched in 1964 as Exact. She's 26.21 meters long, and she's running out of time. So she's a motor yacht, not a sailing boat, obviously. So she's listed for sale with Alex G. Clark at Denison, and she's lying in Freeport in the Bahamas. And Alex tells me she is almost past the point of no return. So they're pushing hard for a buyer. So she's not in great nick, basically. She's asking a mere $200,000. But candidly, I think she'll fetch less than that. But it's not about the money. Alex says it's not about the money, which is not a thing you hear often from a yacht broker. Alex is desperate for City to go to the right owner. He says they've turned down about a dozen offers from people because he wasn't sure they were the right people for this project, because he wants to see the boat taken back to FedShip or another quality yard for a full rebuild. And he actually met with FedShip recently, and together they inspected the yacht, and they reckon it will cost north of 10 million euros to bring her back into tip-top shape. So basically, she needs to be taken back to bare steel and rebuilt. The boat was originally built for Joseph Percy Bartram, the former commodore of the New York Yacht Club, and I love this detail. So he had her built basically as a platform to watch the America's Cup in Newport. And the large windows in the hull were the largest approved by Lloyd's at the time and were so big. They were the size they were, so Bartram could have an uninterrupted view of the racing from his dining table. So he'd eat there, very civilized, eating his dinner, watching the America's Cup through these unusually large windows for
Sounds
the
like the
time.
type of thing you'd demand, Stuart.
Absolutely have to mind that. And lots of whole grain mustard.
Yeah, while eating your
So,
whole grain mustard.
and another amazing detail is Bartram is actually Alex's great grandfather. So it's a very personal project for Alex. So if you're out there and, like any normal human being, love classic FedShips, then take a look at City. She was delivered as Exact, but she's now called City. She's on the hard in Freeport in the Bahamas. She's asking $200,000. She's got a lot of work ahead of her and a lot of money. But you could own a genuine piece of maritime history and get an amazing boat in the deal.
Yeah,
It
what an
won't be
amazing
cheap.
story.
Amazing story. And talking to Alex about it only got me more excited about the story. So I've got to figure out a way to tell it as well on the website because the thing that struck me when I saw the story was the price. I thought a 26 meter classic Fedger for $200,000. How could that possibly be? But then in talking to Alex about it, it's clear that that it's priced that way because you've got to spend a fortune, a small fortune getting it
I'm pleased FedShip's given a number rather than your usual
back of the
stuff.
fag packet
Yeah.
calculation. Although I think, before Alex revealed the number,
Yeah.
I'd guesstimated it was about 10 minutes. But we'll put a link to the Denison listing on in the description. Go have a look at her and look at the photos. What a boat. What a boat. I hope she can be saved because, from what Alex tells me, time really is, she hasn't got time on her side, basically. Anyway, that's enough me wanging on about classic Fed ships. What about you, Sophia? What's your choice?
So I was going to go for 63.6 meter Iramari because she has just come back on the market with Ocean Independence for 49 million. I actually have a bit of a soft spot for her because this month marks my 8-year anniversary of boat. And I think she was delivered, or I mean, must have been round about the same time that I started. It was kind of, she was the hype boat of the time. And I did some digging quite literally in the magazine cupboard this morning to find out which cover she graced that year. Can you remember which one it was?
I think I remember the cover line. Was the cover line solid as a rock?
Yeah.
So I'm going to say...
That's a good memory.
I'm going to say June-ish 2015?
She actually was November that year. She was a little bit later than I remembered, which is why I think she maybe was kind of delivered around the time I started. But anyway, you always tell me off going too basic / too high-end with my picks. So I have joined you on the classic Fedship bandwagon.
Oh, well done.
So it's another classic Fedship, which has had an even more sizable price drop, and that is 57.3 meter Amara. She was delivered in 1986 and has been extensively refitted since her launch, including a $20 million transformation, which saw her selected as a finalist in the refit category at the World Super Yacht Awards in 2016. Under new ownership in 2021, she went back to Fedship and had a further £4 million worth of updates, which included a new helipad, new teak decking, an overhaul, and her Lloyd's 35-year class survey. She's got a beautiful Terence Dinsdale interior. And she's also capable of world cruising. So she's got a 5,600 nautical mile range. She's also got the helicopter capability. And she's already gone all over the world, including Alaska and Indonesia. So she's just had a $4.5 million price reduction. So she's now asking $17.9 million and will be available to view at Palm Beach. So yeah, if you're looking for more of, if you're looking for a classic Fed ship that's ready to enjoy, she's kind of the opposite end of the spectrum.
So she's asking less than what her owners spent on her in 2016 for the transformation. That's quite something, isn't it?
Yeah, she's changed ownership again since then, but yes.
Actually, Amara was, she rescued, didn't she rescue the, when Utopia, the Rossi Navi hit Tropic Breeze?
Well, she might have done.
I think Amara was the boat that rescued the sailors from the commercial vessel that sank. I'm pretty sure that's true. We'll hurriedly check that, but I'm sure Amara's got that on her CV as well.
Yes, yeah, it was her.
It was Amara,
quick,
wasn't it?
Quick Googling, yeah. For me, yep.
Well done. That was some hasty Googling.
Okay, are you finally happy with my brokerage pick? Because I picked a classic. Basically, that's the rule. Pick whatever you want, as long as it's a classic.
They've just got better stories, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, look at Iduna... story, look at City as well. I mean, I just love those, and the characters that have owned them over the years are so fantastic, like the former commodore of the New York Yacht Club for City. And there's little tidbits like the windows for watching the racing during dinner. I love all that.
Anyway, we are recording this podcast on a Tuesday. Tomorrow is International Women's Day, and to celebrate, Stuart, I thought I'd spend 16 hours traveling with you because...
What a punishment.
Because we are off to Between the Bays, which actually I'm really excited about because it is our first on-the-water event since COVID. So we have 9 super yachts and their guests coming to sample the beautiful waters of Anguilla and St. Martin. And, of course, our co-host Bellman's incredible resorts on those islands, Capjuluca and La Samana. It's set to be an incredible 3 days, and there'll be coverage on our social channels and bi.com, so you can follow what's going on there. Stuart, is there any particular element you're looking forward to?
Well, avoiding the snow that's forecast for the UK. I think that's my main priority. But it's great to be back on the water with an event. I think that's it's going to be great. It was 10 boats actually, but sadly one of the entrants has had some engine issues. So it'll be 9, but 9 still fantastic. It'll be a great event. We've got some great guests coming. Looking forward to it, all of it.
And I'm then heading home after that, but you are continuing on a sort of grand super yacht tour.
Yeah, the crazy March road trip continues. After that, St. Barts, and then after St. Barts, Palm Beach Boat Show. Long trip this one. Might be the longest ever, I'm not sure.
Is it longer than Australia?
I think so. I generally judge the length of my trips by how angry my wife is when I get home. And this is, I expect her to be quite furious by the time I get home and she just says, by the way, these four children, I want nothing to do with them for the next week. They're your problem, which is absolutely fair enough.
I think you might need to do some serious present buying in Palm Beach on your way before you head back. Maybe at each stop a serious present.
I think you're right. Lots of presents, lots of presents.
Yeah.
Let's talk some news. Why don't you take the first one?
Yeah, so let's start with Damen Yachting has lowered the third unit in its Amel 60 series into the water. The 60-metre yacht, known only as Project Amel's 6003, will now undergo outfitting ahead of her scheduled delivery later in 2023. The unit was sold in September 2021, around 6 months before the first hull, Come Together, was launched, and there's now a total of six of these Amel 60s models sold, with two delivered. We've spoken before on the podcast, but they just seem to be proving to be so popular.
Yeah.
The Amel 60 features a hybrid propulsion package and is designed around user experience, resulting in a large sun deck, swim platform and folding owner suite balcony. Elsewhere, a 9-metre tender can be stored on the foredeck. An interior of 830 GT offers accommodation for 12 guests and 12 crew, plus a captain. Shorit Pillar, sales manager at Damen Yachting, added, "We're very excited to see the yacht enter the water for the first time. With this milestone moment behind, we're keen to move forward to the next stages and prepare this third Amel 60 for this year's yachting season."
Six sold of those 60s. I'd love to know what their KPIs were for this series, but I reckon they're hitting them. I mean, I think if you'd said six sold after the model's introduction, 2 years ago, they'd be pretty happy with that, Amels. Next up, we have the news that Riva has signed its largest order to date with the sale of its first Riva 54 Metri. The 54-metre model is the result of a collaboration between Officina Italiana Design, Ferretti Group's Strategic Product Committee, led by Piero Ferrari, and the Ferretti Group Engineering Department. In a departure from the former 50 Metri flagship, the new model features softer lines and over 370 square meters of outdoor space, including a stepped aft deck with a swimming pool and fold down bulwarks. Other areas of note include a sun lounger forward of the wheelhouse with two alfresco dining options on the sun deck and the bridge deck. The all aluminium construction will allow for a top speed of 18 knots. Construction is already underway at the Riva shipyard in Ancona with delivery set for 2025. She is quite a departure from the 50 Metri, which has a more kind of upright, forward-leaning profile. This is much more in the mold of the smaller Rivas, with swept-back styling, low-down, cool, fast looks. Good-looking boat. Have a look at the website.
Next up, we have the 146-metre Sofia Opera has been delivered after leaving Lürssen's Bremen site in northern Germany. The 10th largest privately owned yacht in the world, she undertook her maiden voyage to Portsmouth Harbour in the UK, where she arrived on Monday, the 5th of March. Terence Disdale is responsible for both the exterior and interior of the yacht, which is understood to have a 20-metre beam and interior volume exceeding 10,000 GT. Opera is thought to be the rebuild of the project of the 145-metre Project Sassy, which was destroyed in the 2018 shipyard fire, one of the biggest losses in maritime history and the reason why everyone's insurance premiums spiked quite so much the following year. Just before Monaco Yacht Show last year, Lürssen released a pretty cool video of an actual opera singer belting out the tune as the yacht left her shed.
Yeah, I recommend finding that video. It's quite something. And we'll wrap up this new section this week with a few concepts. So Norbert Skrug has teamed up with a Swiss design studio called Messerschmitt Yachts to reveal the renderings for a 78.8-metre superyacht named MTT Shield. The yacht takes inspiration from the automotive industry and is conceived as a long bonnet racing car on the sea, designed for long-range journeys in total comfort. Its minimalist profile makes use of clean lines with bands of dark floor-to-ceiling glazing and is based on the same naval architecture as the in-build 77-metre project Black Shark. Good-looking concept, this. It'd be great to see it get built. Have a look for yourself on the website. The other concept making lots of headlines at the moment is called Aeolus, a 131-metre concept presented at the Dubai Boat Show. So named after the Greek god of wind, the design is characterized by unique curves and fluid lines intended to give the appearance of being sculpted by the wind. Her exterior, we're told, also draws inspiration from J-class sailing yachts. So it was designed by Giles Taylor with Njord by Bergman Design House creating the interior concept. It's an Ocean Code concept. I probably should have mentioned that at the start. According to Ocean Co, the concept is in keeping with the yard's eco-focused next initiative and harnesses Lateral Naval Architects' energy transition platform, which is described as an adaptable architecture to enable future-proofed pathway to net zero. Bit of a word salad there, but I hope the message got
through. We'll put the link in. Just read the story online.
Just read the story. Her curves do not make her overly feminine because there is a masculine quality to her bold, forthright architecture, said Giles Taylor. Apart from the deck surfaces themselves, not one surface is flat or brutally geometric, which provides a unique aesthetic that sets Aeolus apart. Another good-looking boat. There's definitely no brutal geometric lines on this one.
Was that the first thing you said when you saw it?
Yeah. It's definitely not brutally geometric. That's not how I would describe it. It was the exact words that ran through my mind. But like Sophia said, check her out for yourself. She's all over social media as well. I'm sure you might have seen her already. Last but not least,
it's the data.
We have our data. So brought to you by Boat Pro, the superyacht industry's leading market intelligence service. Sophia, take it away.
Yeah, so obviously we just mentioned the Dubai Boat Show there, which has just been and gone. So we thought we'd focus on the Gulf and bring you a few numbers from the region. So starting off, we've looked at the activity in harbours between Abu Dhabi and Dubai for yachts over 24 metres, and we can do this thanks to Boat Pro's AIS tracking. So looking at the numbers, in 2018, there were just 70 yachts seen between those two areas. And then by 2020, that had gone up to 84. In 2022, that had shot up to 151. And in 2023, in the same period, January to March, we're seeing 131 yachts.
Massive increase in activity in Gulf waters.
Particularly in this period of the year, which I guess is what you would consider peak Gulf season.
Yeah.
Or maybe a little bit earlier with the Grand Prix and stuff. But yeah, it's definitely kind of the nicest time of the year to be there.
So why do we think this increase has happened?
I mean, there are multiple reasons. So there are more marinas, the facilities are improving, there are increased number of events in the calendar in that part of the world, which is obviously attracting yachts there. There was the World Cup there at the end of last year, etc. But I think we also have to be realistic about the impact of the Ukraine war. And there are the presence of a lot of Russian yachts there. So we can see 22 yachts that are believed to be Russian owned, including 12 yachts above 70 metres that are currently in that area.
Okay, so Russian-owned boats have moved round to the Gulf, basically.
Yeah, I think so. But then if you look back to 2021, there were 113 yachts there in comparison. I suppose then it was COVID before, but in comparison to only 70 in 2018. So the region is also seeing growth in its own right, but there definitely is a Russian influence there.
Yeah, and one of the other reasons it's growing, and a much more wholesome one, I suppose, is the fact that domestic manufacturing of superyachts has improved greatly. I mean, Gulf Craft's product range is improving and getting bigger all the time. The quality of the Gulf Craft products getting really, really good. So tell us about Gulf Craft.
Yeah, so they had two debuts during the Dubai Boat Show, the Majesty 111 and the Nomad 101. So their fleet of yachts over 24 metres is now up to 88. With a total LOA of more than 3,000 metres and an average LOA of 34.3 metres. They're obviously all built on composite, all semi-custom, and the flagship, of course, is the 54-metre Majesty 175, now known as Serenity MRF.
Thank you, Sophia. Now, as mentioned at the top of the podcast, we do have a shiny new sponsor, and that is KVH. Sophia, I did test you on classic Fed ships. I'm going to test you on KVH now. Do you know how many mobile satellite antennas KVH has put into the field worldwide?
Yes, I've done my homework for this one. So KVH has fielded more than 230,000 mobile satellite antennas worldwide.
And did you know that customers with KVH antennas can enjoy cellular support in 150 plus countries as far as 32 plus kilometres offshore?
150 countries. We're going to have to do a pub quiz to name them all.
Lastly, the KVH1 network offers 276 million square kilometres of layered KU band coverage.
That is quite some stat.
That is quite some stat. Check out kvh.com. And that really does bring us to a close. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Thank you, Sophia. Thank you to Grace for mixing and producing this episode of Boat Briefing, which was a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe. We'll see you next time.